we know they get better outcomes, right? There are better outcomes generated in a direct primary care relationship than there is in standard of primary care under insurance. This bill really laser focuses in on memberships. I've been talking about how fee-for-service doesn't work for a very long time, right? It just looks like what insurance-based care is. It's familiar to the doctor, it's familiar to the patient, but all of a sudden the patient's just paying out of their pocket for time with a doctor or for stuff and things. The incentive is not aligned with the outcome that the patient wants to get, and the incentive is not aligned with the profit that the business wants to achieve. I feel like this is a warning shot for fee-for-service businesses. Why does a membership model work really well for niches like pediatrics?
You know, speaking freely, I think that the insurance structure incentivizes things that are unhealthy for children. It's coming out now in the press. I just saw an interview. What percentage of revenue pediatricians get from the insurance bonuses from hitting certain vaccine thresholds?
Welcome to the Freedom RX podcast. I'm your host, Seth Conger, and today I'm joined by my friend and colleague and our executive producer, James Maskell. And we have a really fun conversation and very timely conversation on our hands today. We're going to be talking and breaking down the HR1 bill, also known as the Big Beautiful Bill, and its impacts on healthcare, and specifically on cash pay medicine, privatized medicine, and the alternative holistic, you name it, call it whatever you want, movement that we have in front of us. So this is going to be a really fun conversation, a little back and forth today. And James, as always, it's really good to have you here on the show.
Great to be here. And I'm glad we get to do this because it is, you know, timely.
It's very timely.
Yeah.
So, you know, and I think there's a... There's a conversation that I want to continue to come back to, right? A thread in this conversation that I want to remind ourselves to come back to. And that's, what is the cost of waiting, right? This is a conversation we get to have a lot of times with our practitioners on stages, with the entire community. And you have been encouraging people for years and years and years to take a stand and join this movement and actually come out. And now we have something that is supporting it, right? There's a tailwind behind this. And so let's start from there, right? You've been preaching the cost of waiting for years and years and years, and now we have something in front of us that's big.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a very exciting moment. And I hope today in the podcast, we can just like unwrap the opportunity. I guess I just want to start by saying is that most people who have heard anything in the news about the Big Beautiful Bill or HR1, specifically as it relates to healthcare, the focus in the media is all about, you know, Medicaid people losing care. And, you know, we honor that. We understand that that's happening. Yes. We shouldn't look past that. I don't think, you know, it's hard to judge whether things are good or bad without 10 years of seeing it happen in an ecosystem and see how all the players react.
Yeah.
Certainly I've been in healthcare long enough to see Obamacare come in with a lot of like high promise. And then you look back after 10 years and you say, did it do what it was really looking to do? In some ways, yes. In some ways it was a disaster. In some ways it was, you know, it was helpful.
Sure.
So, you know, this all happens in an ecosystem. Everyone makes their decisions on the back of it. But why I'm excited today is because, you know, 2016, I wrote a book called The Evolution of Medicine, and that's been like my thesis for the transformation of medicine. And the evolution of medicine refers to the fact that medicine has to adapt to chronic illness, mm-hmm. right? So it was created for acute illness, and now it has to adapt. So what is the best way for it to adapt? And my thesis in that book was that the most friction to that adaptation is in going to be in health systems and bigger organizations, but an individual doctor could adapt now, right? Could open in the book. I talked about direct primary care as a way to have a membership model, have recurring income, have a real relationship with people where you don't have any financial incentives, cut your costs of administration, and essentially run a very lean, very health-focused, very connected practice. And that also gives you the time with your patients to get into the lifestyle stuff, the root cause stuff. You know, the economic model of DPC is ideal, and because that creates long-term connection, it creates longitudinal care, and then a relationship. And then you now have time to do this new standard of care, which is like a lifestyle first root cause approach. And so that was the thesis in the book then. And, you know, now what's happened is, you know, in this bill, and it's not on the front page of the New York Times, but if you're in the industry, you understand there is huge implications for that, because now this has been purely like a pioneer's thing. In order to execute this, and if you look out of the market today and you see the people who have actually done what I recommended in 2016, there's a pioneering energy, right? You have to go against the grain because there's a lot of unknowns in that journey. I think this marks the moment where we're moving from like the pioneer moment to like the beginning of mass adoption.
Yeah.
And so I think if you've been sitting on the sidelines and thinking, oh, I'd love to have a practice where I could just be with people, I didn't have to worry about insurance, this is the moment to strike.
Yeah. So let's actually break down HR1 a little bit, because as you mentioned, it's kind of hidden in the back pages and it's definitely not across the news where it is going to benefit alternative medicine, DPC, cash pay, et cetera, et cetera. So break that down for us. Where are the benefits there?
Yeah. So if you decide to leave insurance and start a cash-based practice for the last 20 years, you are essentially fighting for post-tax dollars. So, you know, all the rest of medicine, your health insurance, everything is now paid pre-tax, right, by your employer or by yourself. And then ultimately, you know, you have this money left over. Now, DPC very specifically is moving into a pre-tax category. So essentially, it has the same role or the same, it fits in the same way as medicine or as like
same
as health insurance. So that's insurance. The incentives are much better. So essentially one for consumers, what that means is that it's less expensive. It's probably like 30-40% less expensive because you're playing with pre-tax dollars. For employers, it's a big deal because it means that ultimately, it was a gray area in the last 10 years as to whether or not DPC could be paid by employers. And there was like, because the insurance industry lobbied for the fact that it was a little bit too similar to insurance and maybe could be considered insurance. So now it's in this sort of ERISA insurance conversation. And it makes it very clear in the bill that it's not.
Right.
It's not insurance and it can be paid as a pre-tax benefit to your employees. So there's a huge, huge opportunity there. And, you know, if you then think about the implications of that, like the demand for this kind of care is about to skyrocket. It all kicks in January 1st, 2026. So as we sit here in July 2025, it's like there is a clear moment where things are going to shift. And ultimately, anyone who's watching this can make a decision to take action on that information today and ride this tailwind into probably the practice that they'd always dreamed of delivering.
Yeah. Yeah, and we know from a personal standpoint, we both have direct primary care doctors, right, that we work with with ourselves and our families. We also have a lot of clients in the Freedom Practice Coaching Network that are DPC and many more are adopting that. We know they get better outcomes, right? Yeah. There are better outcomes generated in a direct primary care relationship than there is in standard of primary care under insurance.
Well, everyone in the world knows that high quality care reduces costs down the road. So that's why in other countries, they really focus on investing in primary care because they know that the ROI is there.
Yeah.
Ultimately, in the last 20 years in America, mainstream primary care has become essentially like a sales funnel for either drugs or surgeries. And that's why you see hospitals buying up primary care clinics and then, you know, using them as their lead funnel for their profitable services. And I think patients kind of can feel that, right? Yeah. They know that there's no value being delivered in this interaction. They're only having a very short visit. It's always drugs or it's always a referral. And I think people are wise to it. And ultimately, if you've never experienced it as a patient, like being with someone who's clearly only there and sort of acting as, acting in your best interests, it's a totally different experience. And once you've had a sort of a feeling for it, you can't go back.
That's right. And in the bill, they've capped the monthly allotment at $150, which I think is really interesting, right? Because it kind of creates that definition around what DPC is, direct primary care, versus concierge.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of confusion in that in the marketplace.
Yeah. The difference between the two is that concierge bills insurance and charges an extra fee. So if you look at, you know, One Medical, those kind of groups, there's a fee on top and they're also billing your insurance, right? Okay. DPC is unique in that you don't bill the insurance at all.
That's right.
So it's $150 a month. You know, it has to be led by a provider or owned, you know, owned by a provider. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, there are nurse practitioners that can run DPCs. There are MDDO that can run DPC. But also you can see this from the success of like Parsley Health, you can layer in functional medicine in at that price. The actual average price, I think, for DPC in the country is around $80 to $90.
Yeah.
But that's literally just slower primary care with a relationship.
Sure.
You know, what we're talking about here is using the opportunity to create a membership model that is tax deductible, that gives the time and space to do some root cause care. And that's plenty of amazing examples. I mean, we know Dr. David Tusek, who I've had on the show, and, you know, I know he, you work with him. He's incredible. And, you know, his whole thesis is like, can you deliver the highest quality primary care for less than a cup of coffee a day? Turns out you can.
Yeah. And, you know, I think this gives the opportunity with it being at $150, right? It gives that opportunity to build in something like a functionally informed primary care, which is how Cloud Medical functions.
Right.
It is not your functional medicine doctor, but it is taking a look at you as a whole person, right? Yeah. And really digging into the different areas of health. And I think that is so important. And if that wave starts moving into primary care, we're going to see a lot of change in outcomes.
Absolutely. And it also provides enough revenue for a team-based approach. So I would say in an $80 a month primary DPC, you're just getting time with the doctor.
The one doctor.
But in $150, you could have a health coach and you could have a nurse manager and you could possibly have a pharmacist. You know, there's some interesting models I see where pharmacists come in and kind of play a de-prescribing role.
Right.
So, you know, you can kind of make it whichever way you want. You have to make the unit economics work. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there's a lot of opportunity right now to sort of start dreaming about what could be real and start executing towards it.
So, you know, I think this is really interesting because we talk a lot about business models, right? And when a new client comes into FPC, the first thing we look at is what is your business model? Because we understand that is the lead domino, right? And your ability to scale as a business is going to depend on the underlying model that you have built. And this bill really laser focuses in on memberships, right? Direct primary care, $150 per month. It is built into a subscription, built into a membership, right? So for me, I've been talking about how fee-for-service doesn't work for a very long time, right? It just looks like what insurance-based care is. It's familiar to the doctor, it's familiar to the patient, but all of a sudden the patient's just paying out of their pocket for time with a doctor or for stuff and things, right? And just the incentive is not aligned with the outcome that the patient wants to get, and the incentive is not aligned with the profit that the business wants to achieve.
Yep.
So I feel like this is a warning shot, right, for fee-for-service businesses because of the membership model and the focus on that. And I really want to kind of get into a discussion around the membership model in general, right? Because it's not just direct primary care.
Yeah.
There are other membership models, and we've been talking a lot about this. We recorded an entire podcast on just membership models alone and why that is a sustainable model for a business going forward. And you've been talking about this since 20 years ago?
Yeah. I mean, look, the ups and downs of running a practice smooth out a lot when you have predictable future revenue.
That's right.
Right? Predictable future, you know, and it presupposes that you're going to have a long-term relationship with this person.
Yeah.
And ultimately, like, that is relationship-based primary care. And, you know, I think even if you are listening to this and you're like, well, I don't like to do primary care, I'm pretty sure that Parsley Health, you know, will qualify for this, and they don't do really primary care. It's really like a functional medicine light delivery system.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think there's a lot of opportunity generally, but I think there's also opportunity, particularly in things like pediatrics. I think there will be like longevity focused DPCs, brain health focused DPCs. And so I think there's a huge opportunity right now to jump into that and ready for January. But yeah, look, I mean, it can be, you know, it historically, the reason why you wouldn't choose a membership model is because it's hard to acquire 100 members and get your sort of you know, get your like monthly nut covered, right? And so that has been the way. But ultimately, even inside this bill, I think there are some things that reduce the downside risk of that downside, because the upside is clear. The money comes in every month and you know that you have predictable future revenue, which for every entrepreneur is great and is the optimal. You know, if you are listening to this and you're in fee for service, you know the ups and downs of good months and bad months and fast months and slow months. You understand that. And then you also understand that there's been friction to the idea of moving in this direction, but this can remove some of that friction.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, I also think about the stickiness, right, of that patient and that patient's lifetime value and the time commitment they're going to make to that practice, right? If all of a sudden it is less costly for them and they can use that HSA and their employer is putting money in that HSA or they're putting money in that HSA, it takes, again, another piece of that friction out where they say, well, wait a second, I can't go spend this money on a TV or a car payment or something else. And in cash, they're always trying to make that choice and decision on a budget. Where do I spend my money? And it's hard in a membership model because if you're not locked into it, people may think, well, I'm healthy right now, so why do I need this, right? Yeah. But I think we both know health doesn't stop at the point that you say, oh, I went through my gut repair and detox, or I did the immune protocol, came out on the other end and graduated from that. And yeah. So the membership model is really important to long-term health.
Yeah. Yeah, it's lining up the incentives. It's lining up the relationship. Like when something goes wrong, you want to be in a room with a practitioner that knows you, your life, your history, and you. It's a very healthy investment.
Yeah. So let's actually jump into some of those niches because you touched on that, and I want to go back to it because I think it's really important. So we've developed a partnership with MAPS. And you really led that conversation, for Freedom Practice Coaching to get in there because it works really well. Yeah. Right. And we understand that they're starting to create health at a very young age and how big of an impact we can make with that. So why does a membership model work really well for niches like pediatrics?
Well, look, I mean, there are other things happening in the world simultaneously now. I think the world is, you know, it's becoming clear that the incentives in pediatrics are wonky, right? And have been for a while. And, you know, speaking freely, I think that, like, you know, the insurance structure for pediatrics, you know, incentivizes things that I think we are starting to realize now are unhealthy for children, you know, overuse of medication, all of these different interventions. Like healthy kids don't need a lot, right? They just need, they need good food and good, you know, sunlight and water. They don't need, you know, all kinds of toxic influences. I think it's coming out now in the press. I just saw an interview with the head of Health and Human Services, Bobby Kennedy, saying like, what percentage of revenue pediatricians get from the insurance bonuses from hitting certain vaccine thresholds and so forth. And that's like been a little under the radar, but is now becoming clear. So what do you want for your kids? You want to have a relationship where there's someone who's going to take care of your kids if something goes wrong, because we care about our kids more than anything. And if something comes up, if your kids has a medical issue, you want to make sure that, you know, you have someone who you can trust on it. Yeah. And ultimately, I think there's been a decay of trust. And I think that the membership model creates trust because it's like, I'm not thinking about anyone's welfare. I'm not incentivized in any other direction apart from how do I keep this child healthy? And again, that gives you a lot of, as a parent myself and someone who engages in with that kind of clinic, it just, you know, everyone's incentives. And ultimately, I think in the next year, you're going to see that if your pediatric website, the first thing that you can do on there with the biggest button is to refill your ADHD meds. Like, I'm not going to that pediatrician.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
And so I think that's a big thing. So I think pediatrics is a great fit because there's a lack of trust in, a growing lack of trust in the profession. And this, you know, creates the right model for, for that. So I'm pretty excited about the possibilities there. And,
Yeah, and there's other areas, right? So I think any area where continuation of care is paramount is a really, really good fit for that type of membership model. So we've had lots of conversations in our past and currently about brain health.
Yeah.
There's hormone replacement therapy, right? There is all sorts of areas that are separate from this episode of care, right? So there's the episode of care of maybe getting somebody healthy, but it's the keeping them healthy, especially if they're in, you know, jumping into brain health, right? Yeah. If they have mild cognitive impairment, or even earlier, just the inklings of memory issues or decision making issues, it's not a one time thing. You're not working with them for 3 months and it's done, right? Yeah. There is an ongoing piece. And so, of course, there's a possibility of doing some of the big work up front with a program, but tacking on a membership so that you can work with this person over a number of years is going to be in the best interest of both the practice and really the patient and the outcome that they want to achieve.
Yeah, I mean, and I also think it could be an interesting lead funnel. Like, if you run a practice right now and you have a package or a program model, you know, why not launch a direct primary care clinic? We've seen this model actually already work.
It works well,
right? Where you launch a direct primary care, you have a nurse practitioner or PA run that part of the business, and that's just sort of like your standard wellness primary care, should we say. And if someone comes through and they've got a lifestyle driven chronic illness and they're like really ready to tackle it, there's an opportunity to, you know, move them into a different part of your practice that might offer, you know, a program. So I think there's some proven models there as well that work really synergistically and easily.
Yeah, you know, things start to fall apart when you try to do everything inside of one model, right? Mm-hmm. So, and it works on both sides. So if you have a $150 a month direct primary care clinic and you're trying to take care of somebody who has mold and multiple infections and really needs like a lot of hands-on work and a lot of labs and a lot of supplements and all of that stuff, and you're trying to do that within that $150 a month, you're going to collapse that model, right? It won't work. You don't have the time to put into that. You can't give them all of the things that they need to get better, right? The incentives all of a sudden aren't aligned. But if you flip that around and you say, I bring everybody into a high ticket program because it's all inclusive and it gets them to the outcome that they want, if they're already a healthy individual and they just need a little bit of tweaking and they want access and a relationship with a doctor, A, they're probably not going to be willing to pay that initial amount, and they don't really need it, right? Mm-hmm. They need an ongoing care relationship.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot of sick people in the United States, and we know that there's a very high percentage, over 50% of people have a chronic disease, and I think it was like 43% or something like that have two, right? So there's obviously a very large portion of the population that does need a programmatic style to work with them in that episode of care and actually create health, because they don't know what that means. But there's a huge amount of individuals that just want to keep their health.
Yeah.
Right. And that's where a membership model really thrives.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that the moment that we're facing in the zeitgeist where people are looking to get healthy, multiplied by new incentives, creates a new opportunity that didn't exist before.
Yeah.
And I guess the other thing, big part of the bill that I really wanted to talk about is employers.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I think back, so 20 years ago when I arrived into America, the first job that I had, I worked in a clinic in Georgia that was sort of functional medicine in a spa environment. We actually had a membership. It was a bit more involved because it included spa services. I think it was like $220 a month. But, you know, ultimately my job for the first, I worked 5 days a week, 3 days a week, I was in outside sales, like selling the clinic. Mm-hmm. And then 2 days a week, I worked at the front desk. So I was like learning the operations of how to run a clinic, but I was also doing this outbound role. And it's not usual for a clinic to have an outbound role. I mean, how many of you work with, right, to have someone whose job it is to go out there? So what did I do? I joined the Chamber of Commerce. When you join the Chamber of Commerce, you get a list of all the other partners in the Chamber of Commerce and how many employees they have. And so I would start to make calls. So if I'm sitting here thinking, like, if we just said, like, the downside of the membership is that it can take a while to get up to meet your monthly now.
The cold start problem.
Right, the cold start getting up and running. And that's why Freedom Practice Coaching has recommended programs for all this time, because, you know, if you're selling things in $6,000 to $8,000 increments, it's quite easy to get your business up and running. Whereas if you're selling them in $150 a month increments, it's quite difficult.
Yes.
But, you know, one of the things that we've seen in the last few years prove out is that an employer could decide, and by the way, there's a lot of movement in the market. So 10 years ago, no benefits broker would be recommending DPC. Right now they are, because it's become, it's if you're like the kind of person that goes to those kind of conferences, like you're the HR person and you're going, you've been learning for the last few years that organizations that have chosen direct primary care as part of their plan have saved a lot of costs, especially in self-funded employers, right, where they feel all those costs. So that's already got a lot of momentum, and that's why this exists here at all. So if I'm listening to this right now and I'm in a fee-for-service practice, or if I'm, you know, working for someone else, I'm working in a hospital and I'm dreaming of having a practice where I can really be with people, have consistent income, and also reverse chronic illness, this is what I'm doing. I'm joining the Chamber of Commerce, right, with my micro new practice, what it is. And I'm writing a letter to every employer in the community to say, big news, because of HR 1 in January, these are the following changes that are happening in the tax code. That now means that especially if you're an employer with a high deductible health plan, which is the majority of employers, because healthcare is so insanely expensive that they have to take the least expensive one.
That's right.
You can now add a direct primary care membership to your services. And explicitly in HR 1, it calls out the fact that, like, DPC is not insurance and therefore can be engaged pre-tax by employers and can be paid for by employers in that way. So you can make a very convincing letter.
Yeah.
You can send it to the CEO of, or the, if, you know, head of HR, depending on the size, to all these companies. And my guess is that you would get a lot of bites from that letter. And over the next few months, you could take some meetings. And I would imagine, I already know that this is happening because this has happened. I've seen it on LinkedIn. I've spoken to doctors who have done it, where you could sign 200 patients at $150 a month. You could make a deal. And then you have a practice. You're making 30 grand a month.
Yep.
All good. Now you can get ready to quit your job. You know, you can say it's starting on January 1st because that's when it kicks in.
Right.
You could work out a rent for a building that is going to be a good fit for you because you have this predictable income. You sign that contract ahead of time. That is not a hard thing to do. I think that people who are listening to this, you could probably do it. Like, you could probably write that letter, have a few meetings, and, you know, you might get a group of 20 here and a group of 40 here and a group of 60 here. Yeah. You might have to go through a few more hoops for an organization of that size. And obviously they have to all work in the local area in order for that to really work.
Sure.
But ultimately, like, that is an opportunity today. And there's really no risk, right? Sending 200 letters or 500 letters out on behalf of a clinic that you just started on paper, you don't even have to start the clinic. Just think about what your name of your clinic is going to be. Make a little logo, ChatGPT, and you're off.
And you're ready to go. You know, it's really, I love the way you think about these things, right? Because you break down what seems like a insurmountable problem for a practitioner into something really simple. And it does take effort and does take action, right? You have to join the Chamber of Commerce. You have to write the letters. You've got to send them out. You got to do that. But it's not insurmountable where you're thinking, okay, I've got to run Facebook ads and acquire customers at, you know, however many $100 per customer and run this crazy funnel. Like, there are other ways to do this. And yes, that works. And that's actually a very sustainable way to keep your business going, is running paid ads. And most of our practitioners do that. Many of them don't start there, right? Because it is a bigger risk. It's bigger dollars going out. And you have to understand all of the different pieces of a marketing funnel, how to run ads, how to build ads, how to do that, what's different about each, you know, each platform that you're running on. And this seems like a very, very simple way. And I think the worst case scenario is you get your name out in your community that you're a direct primary care doctor, or you are a functional medicine doctor with a membership that is there to serve the community. And that's kind of the downside risk.
Yeah. that, I mean, there's very little downside risk to that strategy. And to your point, if you look back at clinics that did DPC successfully in the last decade, a lot of times it looked like having a membership manager. It looked like running ads, doing talks, doing these kind of things to bring people in. And so I understand why that could seem risky, because it's like these capital outlays. But I think there's a moment now where you can find the easiest way to get started and with a high reward, low risk strategy.
Yeah, and by the way, there's the Chamber of Commerce where you can find the businesses, and also you can walk down your street, right, and look at the size of the building and the amount of people who are working in there and get a pretty good estimate. I know that, you know, some of the DPC clinics that we work with, a lot of the employers that they work with are restaurants, actually like high-end restaurants who have a good margin and want to take care of their people. And they want because there's so much turnover in that space, they want to have something that's different about their restaurant, right, that competes with others, so their servers aren't jumping around back and forth, and they can offer this really high quality healthcare. And there's a ton of restaurants, especially if you're in a metro area, that have 20, 30, 50 employees that would absolutely love this. So even pitching this as a differentiator for those businesses with the, you know, with the incentive on the other side that it's with the pre-tax dollars.
It's a remarkable benefit, isn't it? Right.
It really
it's like
is.
It's something that would go above and beyond. When you say, hey, I want you to be healthy, you're going to have your own personal doctor who you can connect with, who you'll be able to spend time with to make sure that you're really healthy. That is something that would make me feel very supported as a employee.
Healthcare in general is an expectation, right? But I have not spoken to a person unless they've been in a catastrophic accident or needed to use something for like a major surgery, no one's happy with their healthcare plan, right? Like none of the employees are psyched and jazzed about that benefit, but it's an expectation that companies do that at this point. So it's really unfortunate, because when you have an expectation that provides very, very little benefit and the employee doesn't actually realize that that is good for them, right? Then it's just kind of like a throwaway, and it doesn't work for anybody unless they're in an accident. God forbid that happens, but they're protected, and that's wonderful. But giving somebody a DPC membership or allowing them to choose a doctor to work with, like, that's huge.
Yeah, I think it really shows that you care and that you're being thoughtful about what you're doing, because it's very easy to default into the default plan. And everyone who's been in that default plan realizes that this is like a worst case scenario.
Yeah.
You know, only.
Yeah. So, you know, jumping into, we talked a little bit about what practitioners can do today, right?
Yeah.
What they can do to be creative about this and start. What about the practitioners who are already up and running?
Yeah.
Right. So they are, let's just talk about fee-for-service. You're in a fee-for-service business. You have a few hundred, maybe even a few thousand patients that come to see you on an ad hoc basis when they need to.
Yep.
What does it look like for them? How do they take advantage of
this? I think it's exactly the same strategy as the employer thing. I think you're sending a letter to all of your patients saying, thank you so much for your support in the time that you've been here. Like, I know that it's been difficult to justify, you know, using your money to pay extra for medicine. And your trust in me means so much.
Yeah.
But guess what? There have been significant changes in this bill that now means that you could use my services with pre-tax dollars. And the only thing is, we have to be in a membership model. And so starting January 1st, if you want to stay in my care, I will be offering, you know, some limited appointments possibly, right?
Sure.
If I do that, but ultimately, all new patients, and my expectation is that patients will be in this model, and ultimately it's going to be $150 a month. And this will include this, 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 and this. You're going to have different tiers like that. I think that is an emerging best practice, is to have different tiers, because I could see a situation where you have $150 a month tier, and maybe a $90 a month tier. But in the $19 a month tier, you can be on webinars, you can be in virtual group visits, you can, you know, you just have a little less care, less time. And some people will opt for that because they want to have the, it actually provides great incentives for people to do the work, to get healthy and not need you as much, right? But still keep you in the mix and still keep paying, you know, those fees. So, and it's good, you know, it's good sort of residual income for the clinic as well to keep people in that sort of lower tier where you're only doing one for many services or maybe a bit of health coaching or maybe some group visits.
Sure.
So I think there's some, you know, some potential there. But I think you're sending that letter and you're doing a couple of education events. You're leading with this change and you're saying, hey, this is now, and but guess what? It's going to be cheaper than before because now you can use these pre-tax dollars and you can use your HSA and so forth. So I think positioning it as exciting news for the industry and exciting news for you because you're going to save this money, you know, creates a situation where whatever trepidation you may have felt about doing this, because you could have done this in the last 5 years anyway, but like this is the moment where you can, I think a lot of practitioners would dread sending out that letter if it was only bad news, right? Which is now, that's a scary moment. And, you know, I've been involved for 10 years or more with clinics that have done this sort of like shift from insurance to cash or from now cash to membership.
Yeah.
But I think you can like lead with the fact that the only way that you can receive this benefit is to do it in this way.
Right. I mean, it's actually probably one of the scariest moments for a lot of practitioners that we work with. And a lot of practitioners don't, you know, on the prospect side, when we're talking to them about what FPC can do, it is so scary, that idea of sending out that letter and converting over to a membership. They understand how it's beneficial. Mm-hmm. They get that the incentive is aligned. But that moment, that sending out, that jumping out of the plane, right? That that crossing the chasm moment is so scary for people that they actually avoid coaching. They avoid learning how to move into that model and build it from unit economics and make it profitable. They avoid that whole thing because they don't want to send that letter. And I remember we had to do that, right? So at my practice, we had to make that decision. And we had 10,000 patients that we were working with over the course of the last 10 years. Really only about 2,500, almost 3,000 were active. They were coming once a year is how we defined active. But we didn't have great tracking of that because it was a fee-for-service business.
Yeah.
And we only cared if people showed up and the schedule was full, right? And we got paid. But we realized if we were going to scale the business, if we were eventually going to sell the business, right, it had to be A, detached from the founder, doctor, owner, right?
Yep.
It couldn't be all about that one person. And then B, we had to be in a more predictable model. Because if we weren't in a predictable model, all the patients could just go away and it could be gone. And so we knew that we wanted to have an exit at some point. And so that was enough incentive for us to hold our breath and cross our fingers and send that letter. And at the end of the day, we ended up with 1,500 people at an average of about $149 a month. And it completely changed the game for us, right? Like we went from $120,000 a month to $180,000 a month, basically overnight. And it was profitable.
Yeah.
Like, and it was, you know, barely profitable before because we had made some investments to create that leverage so that we could, you know, see more people and grow. But that is so scary because we couldn't, you know, we told a great story, but we didn't really know what the incentive was for the patient. We knew what the incentive was for us, recurring revenue, more predictable. And we said, we will be able to spend more time with you. We'll be able to get you in faster. We'll be able to do all these things. But now you're going to save 35 to 40% and actually get to use your HSA for this. And it's not even saving 35 or 40%. It's actually using your HSA that you're probably not using.
Yeah.
Right. Now for the services that you like. And like that would have, we would not have held our breath. We would not have crossed our fingers to send that letter.
I think part of the reason why it's scary to send the letter is you realize you're going to have a lot of like tough conversations, right?
Right.
Why are you doing this? Like what, you know, in that way. And I think this hopefully allowed you to have a lot of exciting, easy conversations, joyful conversations, because now like, hey, guess what? The world is coming around to this. You were a pioneer. You chose to do a standard of care with your money. And the world is realizing that this is a good idea and now is incentivizing it. All you have to do is just fit into this little box in order to qualify. I think that's a fun conversation to have.
Yeah.
It's because of people like you that this is now happening, because people like you have proved it out. Like, I feel like it's that kind of energy.
Sure. So, you know, with that, right, we talked about HR1, and obviously there's some questionable things in the bill. There's some downsides of it. It looks really great for privatized medicine, for outcomes, especially on the DPC and membership side. But with things like this also comes interest from competition.
Yeah.
Right. And so what I don't expect to happen is just status quo in our industry and practitioners cruising along as they are and no other players coming in. Right. With this level of incentive, this takes people who are maybe on the sidelines about creating a chain of DPC practices or creating big membership programs. And it's now enough incentive for them to jump in because there's a little bit of clarity and security on the other end. And so I think we've been, you know, to come back to that original question, like, what does waiting truly cost?
Yeah. Well, I want to tie in a couple of things, because the thing you just said actually about your exit is very interesting, right? Because when you're valuing a practice, what you're really valuing is predictable future income streams. Right. And that this is the model for that, right? If you try and sell a fee-for-service practice versus a membership, it's going to be night and day as to the value.
Completely different models.
And, you know, this, what we're talking about here is music to the ears of many practitioners and investors and private equity and all those kind of things. So I would say, you know, you can either step into this moment right now and own something that you can sell and have autonomy and have your time. And if you get really good at getting people healthy and they don't need you as much, you can get a lot of your time back. Or you can wait and be an employee of one of these entities that will definitely spring up, because this is going to happen.
Yeah.
And so, like, the opportunity right now is in January to be the sort of the first in your area. And if there are other DPCs that are already there, you could be a niche one. You're longevity focused, a brain focused, a pediatric focused. And so I think, like, it's sort of like the, coming back to the original question, it's like, it's almost like a exponential future potential downside risk from not acting.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, the incentives are finally aligned, and with that, people will act.
Yeah.
And if you don't, there will be a time and a place where you're left behind, right? I mean, we've had the same conversation around, you know, using AI, right, as as an assistant and as a tool in your practice, and how in 2 years and 3 years, if you're not doing that, right, you're probably going to be left behind. And I think this is the same conversation on that model. If you're not building something that can take advantage of these incentives in 3 to 5 years' time, you know, sure, you may have your practice and it may be functioning as it is, and you may have your group of patients and that's all working fine, but it's going to become more challenging to acquire new customers if the group down the street that looks like you and sounds like you and feels like you, they can use their HSA card and pre-tax dollars.
Then I think the only conclusion then is that your one competitive advantage is you, right? Yeah. Is you the person, because that group down the street will probably have an employee in it and they may care and they may not.
Right.
Ultimately, you know, I know that if you're listening to this, by and large, the audience that I've met over the last 20 years really care about helping people get healthy and stay healthy. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, you know, the opportunity right now is to double down on that. Because look, there will be lots of other virtual things. Like right now, you can have a virtual Parsley Health care membership in any state because of the telemedicine laws, right? So that's already a competition. But if I'm a person, like, I want to sit in a room with you.
Sure.
And so there's like your own physical location is now critically important. And like where telemedicine was sort of like the big thing that happened in the last 10 years, there's almost like this amazing relocalization potential because no one is you, no one else lives where you live. And so creating something that is a reflection of you is your strongest, and using the relationship, really what you're selling is a relationship in the membership. You're selling a relationship with you. And ultimately, I think that that's where practitioners need to focus and double down.
Yeah, I mean, the economics of these types of businesses, it's not really that challenging to achieve what you want out of it.
Yeah.
In a small business that has a membership model at $150, you know, $150 a head, you don't need to have 1,500 or 2,000 patients.
Yeah.
Right? If you have the right economics in that business,
yeah,
you're not overloaded with too much staff or too much technology or anything like that, and you don't have a large cost of acquisition, you can absolutely have a fantastic salary, $250,000 salary, on seeing 250 to 300 patients in your panel on a membership model once you get there. And I think you've come up with some really creative ways of fixing that cold start problem, right? And getting up to there faster. But I really see this as a pretty cool turning point for the work that we've both done for a very long time. You've been kind of predicting, you know, obviously, like, I don't think you predicted a bill that was going to make this change, but you have been predicting legislation and been seeing around this corner of at some point, there is going to be legislation that actually benefits the outcome of the patient, right?
Yeah.
And actually saves the system some money. And it's interesting that that's happening from this, you know, from this lens.
Yeah, I guess I do want to take a moment to acknowledge the people that did do this, because like, I've spent time in the last 10 years, I've actually been part of this listserv of benefit brokers, DPC doctors, otherwise, who are sort of looking at the future of value-based care. How do you create value in primary care? And it's just sort of known in that group that DPC is valuable, because you've got benefits brokers who see it, that the cost savings inside employers have been borne out. But this was an 8-year journey, and it's more than an 8-year journey, because the first DPC practices probably popped up in what, 2008-09, right? With Tusek.
Yeah.
So, you know, this is a 17-year journey in a certain way. So I do want to honor those people that have like been putting this in bills and moving this thing forward. I remember there were murmurs of this 6 years ago, and it never quite happened. And so the fact that, you know, this is, we stand on the shoulders of giants. A lot of people have been proving it out with their medicine, coming back to integrity with their benefits broking, right? And actually recommending things that work rather than recommending the things that you're most incentivized on, which is most of selling.
Yep.
And so, you know, a lot of people have done a lot of work to get it to this point. And ultimately, you know, again, I've been in different countries around the world, and I've seen different forms of medicine. You have to have a system where high quality primary care is delivered. And in those systems where high quality primary care is delivered, it fixes everything. And so I'm here to fix the root cause of healthcare. I'm here for however long it takes to do that. And that's why, for me, this is more impactful than the headlines about Medicaid, because it shows to me that there's a pathway forward for doctors to be truly engaged in their work, not to be burnt out, not hating their jobs and not wanting to leave medicine. Patients to be in real relationship with people who actually have their best needs in mind. And then also for green shoots of what could be possible in the future, right? That these green shoots could turn into something really transformational. Because the truth is, the whole health system is broken based on the fact that there's no one keeping people healthy, right? And so you have very unhealthy people doing very costly things. And ultimately, what you have to do is you have to create a barrier, a layer of care that keeps people healthy. Yeah. And I think this could be it.
I love that. Yeah. Well, James, this is so fun to talk to you about this.
Yeah.
I love riffing back and forth on this. And this is a big moment for us. This is a big moment for Freedom Practice Coaching, our entire network of practitioners that we have that are, you know, we've been talking about moving in this direction for years, right? And this now kind of brings some of that incentive into the mix and makes that a little bit easier. Because the fact of the matter is, it's, you know, if you have a model of business, it is hard to add on another one or make a change, right?
Yeah.
Without the aligned incentives to that. And I just feel like this is an amazing moment. It's not the right model for everybody, right? You have to pick the model that is going to match the care that you want to deliver, right?
Yeah.
And if you want to deliver episodes of care and bring people through and out of chronic disease in a short period of time and have an all-inclusive program, then that's going to be the right thing.
Yeah.
But this changes the game for a lot of people. And I think it brings the work that we've been doing, what we've been preaching and saying for years, it takes it to a whole nother level and allows for people to really understand that this is a possibility. And when you align incentives in the right way, great things happen. So,
Well, I want to mention, actually, there's a couple of resources for practitioners who are listening to this conversation. So, you know, one of the resources that we've created is in a partnership with MAP. So that is the premier education organization for sort of functional and translational medicine in pediatrics. There is, we'll put the details below, but there's essentially a masterclass that we created that has a little bit of Seth talking about the membership model, but also has interviews with a number of key people, a couple of doctors that have built really successful membership and pediatric practices through FPC. There's also James Nieuwenschwande, who's the Dr. Nieuwenschwande, who's the president of MAPS and is really like calling us to attention for the fact that we have to build these new robust pediatric practices. So that's one resource, and you can watch that. And we get into some of the details of the membership model in that. And then the other thing is, you know, the scalability assessment that you created. And I feel that that assessment is the most valuable insight that you can understand about the current state of your business. Because it really, if you take time to fill it out, it's going to give you a roadmap to how to get from where you are now to where you want to go. And like this roadmap could be rapidly accelerated by this change.
Yeah. You know, the cool thing in it actually, one of the first questions we ask is about your business model and where you are in that. If you're in fee for service, if you're in insurance, if you're in a membership programs, hybrid. But the cool thing is, it shows you a roadmap of how to do this, but it also shows you where the operational tensions are in your business, right? You can clearly identify what is causing the fires, right? It'll show you the root causes of all of the distractions and all of the tension inside your business. And I think that's really helpful for practitioners. So we'll definitely put that in the show notes. Takes about 10, 15 minutes to fill out. Takes a whole lot longer if you don't understand your business really well.
Yeah.
But the more information you have about your business, the quicker the assessment is. And for a lot of people, it's an eye opener, right? And that's why it was built that way. It wasn't built to be nice. It wasn't built as a lead magnet. It wasn't built to, you know, to try to sell people on things. It was built to give people a true understanding of where they are.
Yeah.
Because the fact of the matter is, practitioners don't get business in medical school. And they don't take entrepreneurship classes afterwards, right? They want to help people. Yeah. And our goal is to put them in a position where they can do the thing that they were put on this earth to do, right? And the first part of that is actually understanding where you are, identifying if you're in a startup or a growth or a scale stage business, and then really figuring out what are the lagging items? What are the things that I need to do to pull back into place so that my business can run smooth again?
Yeah. And I want to say, you know, I think what you've done is de-risk this process. Like the people that have come through, you've obviously sold your own practice. You've done your own membership conversion. So like the pathway is trodden. And so I think for the majority of people who aren't pioneers, you know, this is a moment to say, okay, I see where the future is going. America must have high quality primary care. And I want to play my part in doing that in my community.
Yeah. Amazing. Well, James, this is an amazing conversation. Thank you. It's very timely. You know, this is being recorded in the beginning of July of 2025, and we're 6 months out from this occurring. So right now, you have plenty of time.
Yeah.
If you're listening to this, you have plenty of time to prepare for this change and get ahead of it. If you're listening to this in January and first figuring out at that point, you're going to be a little bit behind the eight ball, right? Yeah. And we like to be as proactive as we can, because proactivity in business or in health is really what makes long-lasting, sustainable changes and allows you to, you know, move through your life without looking over your shoulder constantly. So, James, this was an amazing conversation.
Thank you.
Thanks for being here today.
Pleasure.
For all of those of you who are watching, we actually did record an entire episode specifically on the membership model. So look through our archives for that. that should help really allow you to understand what are the economics and what are the pieces in play when you're thinking about a membership model, right? Because it's very different than fee-for-service and programs. And the worst thing you can do is set yourself up for failure by not pricing it correctly or not adding in the things that are going to be attractive enough to bring in the patients. So check that out. Check out the scalability assessment that'll be in the notes and our video that we did with MAPS as well. And we will see you on the next episode. Thanks again, James, for the conversation today.
Great to be here. Thanks.